Good morning. I think all I need to do is say, listen to what he said, go do it in your classroom. I think we got it covered. Thanks for sharing. It was very profound. Activity, we're doing stuff in our classrooms. Discovery, the excitement of finding out new things. And relationship, to pull it all together and make it work. Very profound. I guess as an introduction, have you ever noticed that God has a distinct sense of humor? They asked me to do this talk, and it's about a prepared place for students. And all of my coworkers that I mentioned it to got a fit of the giggles. Because this is not something that comes naturally to me. Most of the things I've learned in this area, I've learned the hard way. So I guess I stand here in front of you this morning not saying, do it like I'm doing it, watch me. But rather, I can give you a lot of stories why you don't want to do it the way I did. And I guess what I'd like to do today is share with you some of the things that I see. And as I looked at this and as I thought about this topic, some of the things that I feel like God impressed me with and areas that I need to grow in. So I guess I don't want you to feel like I'm talking to you. I'm talking to us this morning. There was a sign on a secretary's desk. And the secretary was the kind of person that has everything meticulously filed. You can ask her for something 3 years after the fact. She knows exactly where it's at, can grab the file, pull it out. There's information. Those kind of people are fun to teach with, I'm telling you. But the sign on the secretary's desk, it said, a lack of poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. You know, there's a few students that came to mind when I saw that. You know, Mr. Pete, please, you know, in this whole row of, okay, and then you start asking some questions. And well, yeah, you know, I chose to do this instead of this, and then because of this, we had this happen. And so now I'm in this dilemma, I'm in this crisis. Can't you change the rules? Can't you fudge the consequences? Isn't there some way we can make this work? And then I thought of me sometimes. And, you know, the Lord, give me something inspirational for devotions. You know, and I don't really have time to prepare for it because there's this stack of tests that didn't get done last night. And maybe God feels a little bit the same way with me that I do with my students. It kind of stepped on my toes. And, you know, that's happened so many times. I look at my students and the way they relate to me and to each other, and I think it helps me understand myself and maybe see some areas in my life where I need to grow also. And how often do we allow a lack of preparation or poor preparation to create a crisis, and then we ask God to resolve it? You know, we don't need God until we're in this dilemma. And I don't want to minimize God is a God of the impossible. God is a God of crisis. But I think too often we tend to not need him until we have a crisis. And for things to work the way he intended and to work the best, we need him all the time, not just in crisis. So in thinking of how this applies to your classroom, when you look at your classroom or your board members, I guess when you look at your school, what do you see evidence of? Is it evolution or intelligent design? Now, we all are familiar with the theory of evolution, right? Basically, there's this biological soup. We had all the acids and the makeup of the cell, and Everything was there. It was just all a mess, right? But somehow, as chaos continued to happen, everything clicked, and presto, there was life. And we all know, anybody that's tried to run a classroom knows that that doesn't happen. I mean, it's just, it doesn't happen. It defies all the laws of nature and everything that we see evidence of. So, you know, a class needs what? A teacher. You need students. You need something for the students to do. And you need a teacher's guide. And so we throw this all together and we start repeating things out of the teacher's guide, and suddenly there's supposed to be this efficient running class and the students are learning and all kinds of good things are happening and we feel like a success. I don't think so. And I think you get the point. And you contrast that with intelligent design or believing in God as a creator. You know, God deliberately and consciously formed the creation. And as you look at that just over and over again, you see how beautifully everything fits together. And I guess it was kind of a new thought for me, or a different way of looking at it. But I've told my students recently that God is smart. You know, we have all these words that describe God, and I think sometimes they lose their significance. But God is smart. Just take some of the things he's made and tear it apart and look at how it actually works, how it fits together. The intricacy and the complexity and all the things that could go wrong or have to be just right for this thing to operate. And it's perfect. So, you know, he thought of everything. But it's because God did it. God is smart. And so, I feel like there's no question which model we want to pursue. Intelligent design. But design also speaks of somebody put effort into it. Somebody thought ahead. And it didn't happen by accident. I'd like to turn to 1 Corinthians 14:33, if you care to. 1 Corinthians chapter 14, read verse 33. For God is not a God of confusion. He's talking about what's happening here in the church. And I think that's something that I need to remember. That does not reflect God's character. God is not the author of confusion. And he gives them a lot of examples. And later on, in verse 40, he comes back and he says again, let all things be done properly and in an orderly manner. God, you know, the times when we see in our classroom or in our students those areas of their life or those activities, those things that become chaotic, that's not a reflection of God's character. But I guess there's a few things that I think we need to remember in thinking of that. My classroom shouldn't necessarily be physically perfect. Because if your classroom's physically perfect, then there's probably not a whole lot happening there. It's kind of a sterile place, you know? And there's a difference, I think, between chaos that comes from randomness and just nobody really knows what's going on, but everybody's doing something, and I'm sure most of us have experienced at least some of that at some point. The difference between that and the flurry of what Wes mentioned, activity, discovery. There are things happening. Your classroom is alive. There's life there. And there's a fine line, and it's probably okay if we sometimes fudge off on one side or the other. But let's not feel like, or let's not get the idea that we need to have everything perfect and always cleaned up and just so. That's not the goal. I feel like that's a detriment. In thinking of preparation, what are some of the things that happen to me as a teacher, and what are some of the benefits to my classroom, to my school? When I take the time, when I invest the effort, put forth the what it takes to properly prepare myself and my classroom. And I think the first thing that comes to mind is it communicates value. It communicates value. You are expected and you are important. Now, you think about it, if you get an invitation to a friend's house for a meal, if you get an invitation for a supper somewhere, when you get there, there's some preparation that's been done. Now, I'm not talking necessarily about the spur of the moment thing where you're talking and they say, hey, yeah, come on over, we'll find something to eat or we'll hang out, whatever. But where they've said it's been scheduled and it's something that you're both looking forward to, when you get there, there's been a lot of preparation put into what's going to happen. And that communicates that you are someone that host or hostess value. They put time and effort into preparing before you got there because they value you. They've made a place for you. At a wedding, there are a lot of guests, but there are some extra special guests, and they have a special place to sit. They're valued, and that value is communicated by preparation. We've saved this place for you. We've thought about this beforehand, and we've saved this place. This is where we want you to sit. I just saw this carried out in a funeral that we had at our church. There was an unexpected death of an older man who otherwise had been basically healthy. Very large family, and the weather did not cooperate. It was probably one of the nastiest days of the winter, or even really close to it. It was somewhere between right around that 32 degrees, 30 to 33, and dumping rain and switching back and forth, and it was just miserable. And so the road conditions gave a lot of people problems, and I was helping with a group that was doing some of the singing, so we were sitting on the balcony, and about halfway through the service, there was a couple that walked in that was fairly close related to the gentleman who had passed away. But you know, the usher took them right up about half to three quarters of the way up into the auditorium and seated them. Now, how do you think that made them feel? We were expecting you. Even though you're late, we have a place for you. You're a valued part of this ceremony. And I think it's so important that we do that to our students. We need to help them feel like they're important and we're glad to see them there. Communicate value and welcome. Another thing that does, or the second thing that does, is it forces me to prioritize. Because if I'm going to sit down and prepare, if I'm going to sit down and think this stuff through, what are we going to do, how's this going to work, I have to decide, where do I really want to go with it? What is the most important? What is the least important? What's the thing that we want to make sure we get done? What are the things that we're going to drop if we don't have time for? The next several points have somewhat to do with the material and preparing with, in light of the academic side of it, I guess you'd say. Is it, but as I was trying to tie these things together, I realized that it applies to more than that, though. And I'll try to explain what I'm thinking as I go along. Number three, it gives my teaching a ring of authenticity, of authority. I know what I'm talking about. I'm not just repeating things out of the teacher's guide. I've cross-referenced things. I've researched it. I have information that's even outside of the material. And whether that's a lesson or whether that's classroom structures or why we do things the way we do, I've put time and effort into it, and I know why I want to do things this way. It's authentic. The fourth thing, it generates a relaxed confidence. I'm not worried about what's coming up. I'm not insecure with what might happen or what might not happen or where this is going to go. I've got a plan. At the same time, it's not arrogant or come across as pompous, but it's because I know what's going to happen and I can relax and do what I'm supposed to do. The fifth thing that it does is it creates enthusiasm. And enthusiasm is something that is contagious, as something that our students, some of them especially, desperately need. I mean, you've all seen that student that comes dragging into class and, oh joy, it's math or this, and it's just, they look like their batteries are just about shot. And they've got to be recharged somewhere. And the place it's going to come from is you as a teacher. And there's nothing that I've found that can sap and just drain the enthusiasm out of you as much as careening through an ill-prepared and unplanned, chaotic day. It'll suck you dry and you've got nothing left to give your students. But you know, where does enthusiasm come from? I think primarily it's something that comes from God, as our relationship with Him, as we interact, and He impacts us. But you know, being alive and interacting with the world around us, and just being excited about what I'm learning, and putting the effort in to learn new things, to stretch myself, to try new things, that's all part of it. I'm just excited about being alive and what we're doing. And it's amazing how that can transform your students' attitudes and how that can change the way they relate to you, how they relate to the material, how they relate to each other. Another thing it does is it clarifies purpose. What am I trying to do? If I can clearly define that, I've made some huge steps in being able to actually do that. It clarifies purpose. And there's two things that I see happening with that. When I have a clear purpose, I choose an end goal. Where do I want to come out? And at the same time, it gives me a framework for meaningful evaluation. And I think those two things are crucial to our success as teachers, to our success as Christians. Goals and evaluation. There's a quote that sounds simplistic, but if you think about it, it's actually fairly profound. And that is, if you aim at nothing, you're sure to hit it every time. Like I said, it sounds a little simplistic, but it's actually pretty profound. And you know, some of my students have trouble pushing themselves. They're saying, okay, what's the bare minimum? and I'm going to shoot for that, and that's all the further we're going. Or they might do a bit more than that, but they're not going to do anything. They're not going to push themselves, not going to reach for something more than they have to, or more than they're fairly sure they can accomplish. Some of them are, I guess that can be for a variety of reasons, but I found that some of them are also so petrified of failure that they will not take the risk of setting a goal that's really high. But I've told them, I said, you know, what you accomplish, you'll be able to accomplish so much more by shooting for the top, by setting your standards high and missing it. You're still going to accomplish way more than if you're fine with mediocrity or with not even trying, not even setting a goal. And I think the same thing can apply to us as teachers. What is my goal? What are the things that I want to accomplish with my students? What do I want them to learn? What are the things that I want to see develop in their character? Who do I want them to become? And then give it your best shot. When that doesn't happen, when you don't reach those goals, evaluate it. What do we need to change? What do I need to do different? Where did we get off track? And when it goes well, do the same thing. Evaluate it. What made this thing go the way it did? What were some things that I can learn from this? And whether it's a smashing success or an abysmal failure, give God the glory. And remember, it's not you and it's not me, but it's God through us. There's another aspect that at first was, as I thought about this, it seemed like they were opposites. Like the two didn't go together. But I think there's a definite connection here that we can learn from. And that is, preparation gives room for flexibility. You know, we think of preparation schedules and agendas and all this kind of stuff. Well, where's flexibility coming to that? But I think there are going to be, life will give you enough curves and enough things that we can't plan for, enough things we can't schedule for, that we're going to do our students a disservice if we're too rigid. And this, incidentally, is one that I do really like, because I'm pretty good at this one. I worked for several years at Bald Eagle Boys Camp as a counselor. And one of the supervisors told me, he said, you know, mix it up. Do some things out of the ordinary. You know, don't just stick to the routine, because that can get stale, that can get dry. But he's also the one that told me that you have to have a routine before you can break it. So, yeah. Okay, point accepted, right? But I really think that there are things that come up, and if we are locked into this thing and we're bound by our agenda or the schedule that we've made, we're going to miss impacting our students, and we're going to miss educating them like we could if we could be flexible. Variety is the spice of life. But it wouldn't work to take a scoop of red pepper and add some mashed potatoes to it. And I think that's something that I need to remember. We need routine, we need structure, but we don't need to be bound by that. And I think many times we end up, we tend to be, to err on one side or the other. We tend to be the fly by the seat of your pants, let's take what comes and we'll make it work somehow. Or the, I mean, you can set your watch by what happens. And every, this is the way we do it, and we don't deviate from it. You know, when there's a wreck on the highway right out in front of the classroom, go ahead and have everybody stand up. Move over and look at what's going on. Talk about traffic safety. You can sit there and try to lecture about dangling participles and predicate nominatives, but they're not going to get it anyway. So, you know, that flexibility. And the thing with being flexible, if I know where I'm going and something comes up, I know where I really want to end up. And I can still keep that and make time for some of these other things. And I think that's really what hit me is it seems at first like they don't gel, they don't mesh. But really, if I'm prepared, I know where I'm going, I know what I want to accomplish, that is going to free me up to be flexible and still take care of the things that are really important. And you know, when those interruptions or those twists do show up, I can evaluate them and have confidence in the decision that I made, because I've already decided, I've thought through what is the most important, where do I need to end up, and I don't need to second guess myself. What does a prepared place look like? And I guess I was thinking a little bit of this before I heard Wes give his talk. What is one of the things that we think of in heaven? And he mentioned it. And that's rest. I really like where you went with that, though. When we think of rest, we think of safety. We think of freedom from danger. And that's something that I think is so crucial, that we develop that aspect and we build that into our classrooms, into our schools. School is a safe place. It's safe for me, we hope, physically. You see some of the things that have happened recently in some of the schools. And it really physically wasn't a safe place. But I guess I was thinking also of some of the bullying, some of the nastiness that can happen sometimes between students. I think we need to strive to make our classrooms, make our schools a safe place where it's safe. I'm respected as a person. We can interact with each other. And especially, I can be who I am. I don't need to put up a front of being smart. I don't need to put up a front of being cool. I can say what I'm thinking. I can ask questions, knowing that I'm not going to be belittled or ridiculed, but that I'm going to be respected as a person and as a contributor to this whole thing we call school. Now, that doesn't happen without some conscious, deliberate effort and involvement by the teacher. We as teachers, we have to model that, and we also need to make sure that we speak into the lives of our students when we see them not doing that. And I think it's just as important to address the student that's not being kind, the student that is demeaning his fellow students, as it is to also talk to the student who's on the receiving end and take care of both their needs with the goal of making our classroom a safe place. I think it's also a place of clarity. We're children of the light, and God also, Jesus talks about walking in the light. So what does that mean? First of all, I think it means we need to have clear expectations. And by clear expectations, what I'm saying is the students know and understand what is expected of them with classroom structure, with recesses, with the way they do their work, with the way they relate to each other. A clear expectation. And I've been amazed at how that can eliminate and minimize discipline problems. As a chief, I was working with the youngest group, the 8, 9, 10-year-olds, a few 11-year-olds. And as most of you know that have children or that have babysat, going to bed can end up resembling a circus sometimes. And the group that I had, they were no exception. There was a point there when it was almost ridiculous. That was when all kinds of stuff would come out and we'd be dysfunctional and end up going to bed at midnight or 2 in the morning, and then that was just a recipe for a disaster the next day because we're all tired and cranky and we can't stay on schedule, and so it's hard to get along with each other, which creates a whole bunch of other problems. And then sure enough, it's time to go to bed again, and it's just like, okay, Lord, we need the Red Sea parted, okay? But what we started doing, what our supervisors suggest that we do, is we started talking about going to bed when we got them up in the morning. We started saying, okay, how are we going to do this? You know, are you going to be bringing this issue up when we're getting ready to go to bed? Is that the time to talk about that? We need to have that all cleared up before then. And just asking questions, you know, as we go through our day, we keep bringing it up. How are we? And it was unbelievable, the difference. We still had our issues. We still had some stinkers. But the group was able to function and by and large get that whole thing turned around in a way shorter time than I ever envisioned. I figured this is going to be a year-long project at least till we finally connect the dots here. And, you know, you can apply that same thing to your classroom. If you tell your students, just for an example, if you tell them what you're playing for recess or what we're going to be doing for phys ed, and it's something that's unpopular, we wait till the bell goes, okay, it's time for PE, what we're doing is this. And bam, you get a reaction. Talk about it in the morning when you do announcements. And by the way, what we're doing today is this, and this is how it's going to work. And, okay. But it's not immediate. The students didn't have expectations that they were planning to fulfill in the next 5 minutes. And they've got time to process it. And if there are issues or attitudes that come up, you have time to deal with it. You've got time to help them work through it. And it's kind of like adding oil to the transmission. It's not that obvious, but it sure makes things run smoother. And you know, many times our students, they want to please us. They want to fulfill our expectations. But too many times I haven't communicated, I haven't given them a clear expectation. And too many times when that doesn't happen, it's because I didn't really sit down and think through what I expect. I didn't really have something to give them. A clear schedule. It's a place of clear expectations and a clear schedule. And some of your students are going to need it a lot more than others. I've got some students that yeah, hey, whatever happens, whenever it happens, it's not a big deal. And then I've got some other students that they have their day figured out, and they know what they're going to do. And if the schedule says we're going to do this here, and we're 2 minutes over, they almost end up being dysfunctional. Now, you know, God is using me to help them grow in that area, but that's not really the goal here. And I think it takes a balance. You know, those students need to learn that the clock doesn't run your life, but at the same time, it's only fair to the students to be clear about what's happening when, because really, it is their day that I'm messing with. Clear leadership. In order for this whole thing to work, I think we need to have clear leadership. And what does that look like? How does that work? I guess it kind of ties into some of the other things we've been talking about. But I think primarily what I'm saying is not being timid about giving a direction or giving a call to our students. Here's where we're going. This is what we need to have happen. And the other aspect of that is being able to handle and to deal with issues that come up. I don't think there's anything that will destroy your classroom as quickly as unresolved discipline issues simmering throughout the student body. You know, when there's something there, we know we should take care of it, but we really don't want to deal with it. And so we kind of look the other way. But we kind of know it's there, and the students know it's there, but nothing's really being done with it. Then there's a lot of insecurity that starts. Well, okay, where exactly are we at on this? We're not supposed to be doing this, but they're doing it and nothing's happening. So where are we at? Is it okay or isn't it? And there's just a lot of underlying tension that comes in through that. I think it also needs to be a place of clear blessing. And that is when our students do well, when we see growth in an area, when they have fulfilled our expectations, we need to bless them for that. We need to endorse that. So, I guess I've told you a little bit where I've come from and some of the reasons that I see a need for this. But now, how does this actually work? What do I need to do? I think it starts with making time for reflection. Time to think about what's coming up. And time seems to be a pretty precious commodity and something that I seem to always be running out of. I don't know if anybody else has that problem or not. But doing this and doing it well takes time. And I think we need to take time to prepare for the day. Think about what are the classes that are coming up? Do I know the material? How are we going to run our schedule? What are some things that could go wrong? How are we going to deal with that? Think it through. Prepare for the day. I think that also applies to, you can take it in different size segments, and the way you approach them is going to be different. Prepare for the day, but also the week. What's happening this week? What are the things that I need to do to get lined up? Before we get there, what's the most important? The quarter, I don't know how most of your schools are set up. We run on a quarterly schedule. What are the activities we're going to be doing this quarter? What are some of the requirements? What are some of the extra projects? What are the things that I need to get lined up? What are my students' needs going to be this quarter? How will I take care of that? And then also, the year. What are some of the things I want to see happen? What are some of the field trips we're going to do? How's this all going to work? And, you know, like I said, is one of the things that I've learned the hard way. Simple things like your cleaning schedule, different charts, bulletin boards. Well, that doesn't need to be done right now. It's August. You know, why do I need to? I'll have time between now and then. But it seems like you hit the ground running on that first day of school. And so many times, I don't have time to look back. And all of a sudden, I need it right now. And it kind of slipped up on me, and I didn't have the time to do it. And so now I've got to cut something else out to be able to make time for this, when it could have been done beforehand. And I've learned the benefits and the blessings of doing as much of that kind of stuff, that type of preparation, before the school year starts as possible. It's just tremendous, the freedom that it brings to your school year. It kind of frees you from that surviving from one crisis to the next, if you know what I mean. And I think there's another aspect that enters in here, and that's there are some things that are important, and they have to be done right now. There are some things that are not important that should be done now, but it's not a big deal if we skip them. There are some things that are important, but they don't have to be done right now. And I think that's the category where I have the hardest time pulling it off. You know, some of the preparation things, some of the aspects of getting ready, of thinking, setting goals. Everybody would agree, yep, it's important. But it doesn't have to be done right now. And so too often what happens is it doesn't get done. And, you know, it comes back to some things I've been talking about, not only applying them to my school, to my classroom, but also applying them to myself. And isn't that really where it starts? And, you know, if you don't get anything else that I've said this morning, I want you to get this. You personally, your personal preparation, if you want to call it that, is what's going to make this thing work or not work. And, you know, it comes back to that whole question of personally, me as an individual before God, who am I? And, you know, the question is, who am I, not what do I know? Because if we have untruth or hypocrisy or junk, for lack of a better word, at the core of this thing, then all the details and the nuts and bolts are immaterial. It's going to come apart. It'll unravel. And, you know, the Bible says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain to build it. And so if what you and I are doing is going to have any lasting value, any lasting impact, if it's going to be a success, it's going to start with you, with me. Our character, who are we? What's our relationship like with Christ? Because everything else flows out of that. And I'd like for you just to think with me a little bit of the risk and the trust that parents have who send their children to you. You know, God has given them these children, an eternal soul, and they're responsible for molding and shaping that. They're accountable before God for what happens and for how they handle that talent, if you will, that God has given them for a time. And they have chosen to allow that child to be intimately affected to the core of their being by interacting with you and relating with you 5 days a week. You think about it. In a given week, you probably spend as much, possibly more, depending on the schedules, time with that child than their parents do. You have the potential to damage that child, to break things, to scar them, and the parents will have to deal with it. You also have the potential, and this is the good side of it, to bless that child, to mold and shape them, to show them Christ, and to make an incredible and lasting impact for forever. And you know, in thinking about a teacher and the responsibility that you have, it seems to me that a teacher who teaches for 10 years or more at the same school is going to have a bigger impact on the church of tomorrow than any other one person. Incredible. The parents have more influence with their children, but they don't impact the rest of them. The ministers may have more influence, but they're not with them 5 days a week. Who you are is going to have a profound impact on those children. And you know, historically, the question that tends to be asked, and I think this is right, when we look at hiring somebody to teach our children, somebody to fulfill this role, is not what does he know, but what kind of a person is he? Who is he? I'm sure you've all heard the saying, we teach a little by what we say, a little more by what we do, but most by what we are. And if you stop and think about it, how many of the high-profile failures in business, in politics, how many of those had absolutely nothing to do with ability? The person was totally qualified for the job. They had the abilities to pull it off. They had what it took. But the weak link in the chain and what brought the whole house down was a moral failure. It was a failure of character. Who I am. And you know, in thinking about that, what really would we say is the essence of education? What is the most important thing? Is it becoming somebody? And when I say that, I'm referring to character, who I am on the inside, or is it the acquiring of knowledge? And the Bible gives us a word on that that I think is very profound. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord. And if we, as an educator, if we merely stop with giving the students facts, and we fail to mold their character and to point them toward Christ, I would say we failed. And failed in a huge way. You know, those children come to school to learn, but they're going to learn so much more than math and English. They're going to learn so much more than their books. They're learning, they're building a perspective of what's truth. How do I relate? What's the proper way to deal with relationship issues? How should I live? How should a Christian live? And that's all going to come from you as a teacher. You know, we may end up feeling like, so what am I doing teaching? This should be somebody else. But you know, that's one of the mysteries of God and the things that doesn't really make sense to us, and that is that God can take us and use us where we're at if we're willing to be yielded to Him. And so that means you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be able to attain some out-of-this-world ideal. But you need to be committed and you need to be yielded. And it's as I'm being taught by Christ, as I'm being changed and molded into the image of Christ through my relationship with Him, that God can use me to do the same thing with my students. And that's what transforms their lives. And I think it's important for us as adults especially, because sometimes have the idea that when we're done with school, we're done learning. But I think that's wrong. And I think especially as teachers, we need to cultivate an attitude of learning and to be interested in new things, to be interested in what's out there. How does it work? What makes it go? And as that happens, as we learn and as we grow, we can pass that on to our students and develop that same attitude in them. It's going to leave a huge impact on them and an impact on their success in life. And point them, I'm sure you've all had a friend or an acquaintance that's an author, that's written a book or maybe something shorter, a journal or an account of a trip or something along that line. And you know, when you know the author, it's just a whole lot more fascinating. It's a lot more interesting. And I think the same thing applies to the Bible and to creation. If we know the one who wrote it, if we know the one who made it, all of a sudden it's a lot more interesting. There's an extra fascination there. That's something we need to pass on to our students. We need to call them to that and to model that. So, what are some things that I can do to prepare me personally to be this kind of a person, to point my students to Christ? I think it begins with prayer, with talking to God and interceding for my students, And, you know, our students, well, there's something that I discovered, and we'll probably get into this a little bit more in the session this afternoon. But at Bald Eagle, I worked with children, with boys that came out of some incredibly broken homes. I mean, just, you just wanted to weep. The pain and the chaos and the grief and the struggle that it created for them in their lives. And then I left that all behind and I went to teach at a nice Mennonite plain school, right? And you know what I discovered? We look a whole lot better, but we got some of the same issues. And I don't care how perfect your home is, but there are ways that your parents have missed you and have hurt you. And there are things that you need to deal with as a child in that home. And there are some homes in our churches that struggle. And sometimes I think part of what compounds that is we haven't made the church a safe place to be honest with each other about our struggles. And so we hide it. And the problem keeps festering and growing. And then these children come to school. And what are they supposed to do with it? But you know, prayer, I believe, is so powerful. And so I need to spend time in prayer, not just for myself, personally, not just preparing my heart to minister, but also interceding and crying out to God on behalf of those students that are hurting and for the brokenness in their lives so that He could heal and bless them. And I think an aspect of that that goes with that is also fasting. I think the two go together. As a teacher, if I'm going to be this kind of a person, I'm also going to need to be willing to make personal sacrifice. You know, that'll do something for your students that I don't think anything else will. If they see you making personal sacrifices for them, it goes back partly to what I said about value. I value you enough that I'm willing to give up this to help you with this homework, with this whatever it is. I'm willing to adjust my schedule to be able to help you with this. Or I'm willing to skip out on activities or things I was looking forward to take the time to properly prepare so that I can do my best with the job God has called me to do. And the last point, and I guess what I'd like to leave you thinking about, is I need to be secure in who I am in Christ. And again, I don't want to be leaving the impression that we have to be there before God can use us. But that's where we need to be headed. Because as how am I going to help my students be secure in who they are if I'm not? And you know that'd probably be a whole talk in itself. But am I okay with the way God made me? With the way I look? With the hair I don't have? You know, and there's so many things that enter into that. And I guess probably to illustrate that, kind of what I'm thinking with this, the whole security thing, is to just tell you briefly where I think I learned the most on this issue. And that was as a chief. I'd been at camp for about a year and a half. And I was right at the point where I should be moving into the lead chief spot. The chiefs work together as a team. One of them makes the final call. He's the lead chief. And so kind of he's the one that gives the overall direction for where we're going to go with our group. So I've been there for a year and a half, and should have been moving into the lead chief spot. My co-chief was leaving, and supervisors pulled me out of my group. I was demoted, if you call it that, because it wasn't working. It wasn't happening. And you know, I think all of us, if we admit it, if we're honest, anytime we tackle something, like teaching school, a different job, a dating relationship, I mean, whatever, fill in the blank. Down in the pit of our gut, there's this little fear. Suppose I don't make it. Suppose I don't have what it takes to make it. But you know, I thought I'd work through all that. But that hit me like a ton of bricks. It's the toughest, the most painful thing I've ever gone through. Because I can honestly say that I'd given it 110%. I had given it everything I had. Tried my best. And it blew up in my face. You know, I was mad at God. I was mad at myself. I was mad at those stinkers I was supposed to live with. But I didn't know what to do. You know, God, I could have stayed home and been a failure. But through that, God showed me several things. And the first one was, I was basing my value as a person and my security, who I thought I was basing it on my performance, what I was doing. And I was basing it on what other people thought of me. And folks, that was subconscious. I didn't realize it. I thought I'd worked through those issues as a teenager. I mean, that's in the past. But that can be so subtle. And when you're stinking it up in both those areas, there's really not a whole lot to hang on to. But you know, through that, there were some things that happened, and I don't have time to tell you the stories, but there were some things that happened that were so clearly God using me, even in the middle of that. It was almost like getting a hug from God. And there were also some friends that I had at that time that told me, they said, look, we know you're going through a rough time with your group, but we want you to know that we still value you as a friend. That was gold. That blessed me. And you know, it was about 6 weeks later, I did maintenance for a session. And then supervisors came back and they said they wanted me to go into one of the other groups. Now, the 6 weeks was priceless because I was so numb emotionally and so drained from what I've been going through that I couldn't feel. I couldn't function. And at the end of those 6 months, I'd kind of worked through some of that and come to grips with it, and I was okay with it. And I felt like I was coming alive again inside. And then supervisors come by and they say, we want to put you in another group. And it wasn't just any group. It was the Highlanders. Like, there are kids in there that outweighed me by 40 pounds. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. If I can't make these little guys behave, what makes you think I can make those big guys behave? Like, y'all are crazy. But they said, no, we want you to try it. We think you can do it. I said, okay. I mean, I've already blown it as bad as I can, right? So there's really nothing to lose. And so I went into that group. And supervisors later told me, they said, you were like a different chief from day one. You know, it took me 3 months to figure it out. Because I kept thinking, any day now, these guys are going to figure out who Chief Matt is and what kind of a guy he is. And they're going to realize that they can do whatever they want and it'll be just like my other group was. And Yeah, and at that point, they'll pull me out of here. But hey, till that happens, I don't have anything to lose. I'm going to follow my heart, give it my best shot, and live life. And you know, it was so freeing when one day I suddenly realized that it didn't really matter where supervisors were. I wasn't depending on them to keep my group together anymore. I had the confidence that no matter what came up, with God's help, me and my group could work through it. That's security, folks. And what I'm trying to say here is, if you can be secure in who you are in Christ, you can tackle anything. Because if you fail, it's not going to destroy you. But if you're getting your value as a person and your identity from the things you do, you can't take the risk. Impossible. And so it's not an arrogant or a cocky attitude, but it's the kind of an attitude that allows you to do whatever God calls you to do, even if it looks impossible. And that's going to enable you to invest with your heart and to be real in ways that you couldn't have otherwise. Preparation is important. Preparation is vital. There's a number of good things that happen when we're prepared. But before we get hung up on a lot of peripheral details, make sure that you're allowing God to prepare your heart. Because if you don't get anything else, get that. What really impacts your students is your relationship with Jesus Christ.